A legal education means you will learn to speak in a new language. You will be taught to achieve insight into the world around you and to sharply question what you know.
You can't handle the truth!
What are you doing, detective? What are you doing talking to my client without me present? You sneaky Pete.
Lose! I don't lose! I win! I win! I'm a lawyer! That's my job! That's what I do!
All right, everybody. This is the Comedians at Law coming to you live on, well, I guess live on tape. The week of April 21st. We'll be on uploading this podcast very late tonight for display and listening and downloading pleasure on April 22nd. This is Alex Barnett, one of the co-founding members of Comedians at Law, along with Kevin Israel.
What's up, guys? Happy Sunday.
Exactly. Hope you're recovering from your 420 day.
And yes.
That's right. Yeah.
And I did not partake, but I'm sure many of our listeners did.
Yeah, nor I, but in any event, I'm sure people did, and I hope they're recovering nicely today. But Kev, it's very exciting. This is our 31st episode. We really made something of ourselves here.
I know. We've actually managed to rope people into listening to us for 31 times.
Yeah. And doing really well. We've got a lot of exciting things up on the horizon. So let's talk about a couple of them and then we'll get into the news and to, the interview and the good cop, bad cop. So the biggest development or the biggest, news story for us is that we have this show coming up on April 26th at 7.
Friday.
Yeah, this coming Friday, 7:30 p.m. at Gotham's Vintage Lounge. There are still a few tickets available, so we encourage people to go on Gotham's website and buy tickets, or if they want to get some more information, they can email us at info@comediansatlaw.com.
And the Vintage Lounge is a great room, so definitely get out. It's intimate.
Yes.
It's like the old-school comedy club.
Yeah, exactly. We're looking forward to a great show. We've got an interesting new lineup. We've got some of our newcomers joining us Friday, so it'll be Joan Weisblatt, Siobhan Beasley, Julie Katakis, along with the fellas who've been part of the spine and core of the group all along, Matt Ritter, Kevin Israel, and me, Alex Barnett. So we hope you'll come out to the show. It's going to be really great.
Yeah, come check this one out. And we're trying to make this a regular thing, so let's start it off with a bang.
Yeah, and the other part, it really dovetails nicely, Kevin, is that other thing we've got going on, which is that we've just recently agreed to partner up with the Gotham Comedy Foundation, which is very exciting.
It's big news.
Yeah,
big news.
Yeah. Really a great organization, a 501c3 nonprofit started by a guy named Bill Drews, who himself is a cancer survivor, and the foundation is aimed at providing humor therapy to hospitals and hospices and patients in those places who could use some laughs to help them recover from their illnesses or their treatments, which might debilitate them. And Bill actually used humor therapy for his recovery from leukemia, and he said it worked wonders, so he's trying to give back, and we're happy to be part of this. So,
and look how well humor therapy is working for you. You're 44 going on 78.
Yeah, exactly. If but for comedy, I would look like I was about 1,000 years old. But the exciting thing about the foundation is that Bill himself is an attorney. Some of the members of the board are attorneys. And so I think what's going to happen is that the foundation is going to co-sponsor our regular monthly show at Gotham. And we're going to be reaching out to the legal community in New York, but also to people who are non-lawyers to come, because if they come, we're going to be donating proceeds to the foundation.
And who say lawyers don't do good things? Look at us. We're philanthropists.
Exactly. Not funny, but philanthropists.
Well, whatever it takes. It's something with a F.
Right, with the F sound. And we've got some other good stuff coming up. I know, Kev, you're always busy and on the road. Do you have anything new and exciting on the horizon the next week or two?
Yeah, man. I'm kicking off my monthly show at the Wonder Bar in Asbury Park. The Wonder Bar is a historic location in beautiful Asbury Park on the ocean in Jersey. We're going to do it once a month. It's called the Jersey Jokers Thursdays. This Thursday, 9 o'clock, 8 o'clock show. We're kicking it off with the Reverend Bob Levy from the Howard Stern Show. We're going to do it every month. In May, we're going to maybe have Don Jameson and June, we're going to have Rich Voss. It's the last Thursday of every month. You can go to the Wonder Bars website or go to my website, kevinisrael.com, to find out more. It's going to be a great show.
You have a website now?
Yes, I am official.
Wow. Unbelievable.
Yeah. Unbelievable. I know.
And let's see what I've got coming up on the horizon. Well, last night, even though it's already done, was my second Glass Half Full comedy show that I co-produced in New York with Max Newman and Dan Enfield. And it really went well. It was our second sold-out show in a row. And we're really looking forward to the third show. We're going to be doing a podcast, which will be interesting. And
Gotham Comedy Club should really need to start giving us some love because we're bringing it.
I think they will. I think they will. I think we're going to have a nice relationship with the club and, of course, with the foundation. And we've got a lot of good things on the horizon. Of course, we're really excited about the new members of the group. In addition to the women I mentioned, there's also Matt Storrs out in Phoenix, who won't be at the New York show, but who's been very active blogging for the group and is obviously working hard to market us in the West Coast and in, you know, the Plain States.
He's been working hard for us.
Yeah, he'll be doing a lot of work with Matt out in L.A. and in Phoenix and Nevada, and we're looking for good things from him.
We're covering the continent, man.
We are. We are. We're like the Lewis and Clark of comedy. Something like that. A lot of Manifest Destiny going on.
Something like that.
But in any event, let's go ahead and get started with the news. We got to keep things tight and short tonight because we've got a lot to pack in, and we don't want to keep people here forever. So with that, let's go right to the news.
But since when has the paragon of investigative journalism allowed lawyers to determine the news content?
Intro, at least the first, if you'd like, and then we can go from there if you want.
Let's start off. Why don't you kick it off?
All right. Well, the first story, we're gonna go very legal here, very legally. We're gonna talk about the Alien Tort Statute, which deals with a law enacted back in 1789, allowing non-citizens to bring civil actions in United States federal courts for violations of international law. Until the 1980s, very few people relied on this, but then it became an important tool for human rights victims and sort of a problem for corporations because as the world shrank and things crossed global lines, foreign nationals were using it as a way to seek, recompense for the wrongs done to them. And this case just came up before the United States Supreme Court. A bunch of Nigerian nationals accused three oil companies incorporated in the Netherlands, Britain, and Nigeria of providing resources to the Nigerian government to torture, murder, and conduct other human rights violations. And none of this happened in the United States, by the way.
And this is just hysterical, Alex. I'm glad you bring this up.
Right.
Because what's more funny than human rights violations?
Well, Siobhan Beasley, as you know, is a member of our group and was a prosecutor at the International Court of Justice in The Hague. She dealt with human rights violations all the time. And Siobhan is funny.
Yeah, well, that's and there's our connection, folks. So moving on to our next story.
Well,
I know, but I think this is definitely a big deal. I think this, you know, I don't see why we would be applying U.S. law to crimes and other I don't think my own personal beliefs. I don't think we should be interfering in anybody else's business, regardless of what they're doing. And I think this was the right decision.
Yeah, well, I mean, that would put you squarely in the camp of the Republican conservatives on the court. And, of course, given that's who you are, no surprise.
But you know what? I don't appreciate your tone or what you're insinuating.
Go ahead.
Let me put this in language you could understand, Alex. You're a father. You're a husband. You have a household that you run with a steel fist. If your next door neighbors, if you knew your next door neighbors were parenting in a way that you found just shocking, would you get involved in their business?
I would.
You would go and knock on their door and say, "Hey, knock it off. This is wrong."
I would say it differently than that, but I would get involved because I'm a good citizen and I'm a good parent.
And you're a liar.
Well, not as far as you know.
I think we would all just sit and keep our mouths shut and not get involved, and that's exactly what we should do here. America has enough problems within its own borders of people being mistreated and whatever else the liberals want to run on about. Fix it here before we worry about other problems overseas. I mean, why are we getting involved? This whole theme that we're the international court and the international overseer of all injustice. That's a bunch of crap.
Right, except for when there's a war or any kind of activity overseas, your camp, your side of the aisle is always the first to pick up the muskets and say, let's go in there and kick some behind.
I disagree with that. I don't think we should get involved. I say pull all the troops back, pull everything back, close up our borders, and isolationism. I am all for isolationism.
Oh, okay, so you're a 1930s Lindbergh Republican. You're like, absolutely, we should stay out of Germany. It doesn't matter how many people get killed by Hitler. Let's just build a wall.
Oh, all right. Now you bring on the Jewish guilt. All right, that's fair. Good for you. If you weren't a Jew yourself, I would kick you in the nuts.
Right. Just build a wall around this country and let's stick our fingers in our ears and pretend nothing else is happening in the world.
Yep.
All right. Well, apparently Justices Scalia, Thomas, Kennedy, Alito, and Roberts agree with you. What a surprise. Oh. What a surprise.
Well, there we go. I mean, good company.
Good company. I think you're in company, in bad company. you're in some sort of company. Interestingly, the liberal justices, the quote-unquote liberal justices, Sotomayor, Kagan, Breyer, and Ginsburg, agreed with the holding but not with their reasoning. And they took some issue with the reasoning and said that there are instances when there could be a way for the statute to reach out and touch these types of cases. For example, Justice Breyer said where alleged wrongdoing took place on American soil, or the defendant was an American national, or when the conduct substantially and adversely affected an important American national interest. So I think, you know, that's an interesting kind of taking half the baby, so to speak. You know, in other words, like, let's not say there's an absolute, but perhaps there are instances when this statute might apply.
And I think that's fair. I just think it's a slippery slope. I think once you start getting involved anywhere, you're just going to keep getting sucked in further and further, and suddenly the United States is going to become the arbiter of everything that goes on, across the world, and it's going to be a disaster. People are just going to hate us more.
We are anyway. I mean, the only place we haven't gone in so far right now, I guess, the three hot spots are North Korea, Iran, and Syria. I'm talking militarily, of course, not in terms of legal cases. But it's only a matter of time, I would imagine, before we launch some all-out warfare offensive against those three countries. But we'll see. In any event, we've digressed considerably from the case. Why don't we move on to our next case, next news item this week?
Yes, I like this one. It doesn't have any serious international themes or impact. This was Viacom brought a suit against Google. Because YouTube, which is owned by Google, is promoting a lot of material that's owned by Google or by Viacom, movie clips and TV clips, and that YouTube is pushing them illegally to promote YouTube and to make it more popular, as though YouTube needs to be made any more popular than it already is. A U.S. District Court threw it out. Saying that that there was no infringement of any copyright interest. I think this is the future of law. You know, the internet creates all sorts of intellectual property issues and trademark issues, and this is what we're going to be seeing a lot of, because you know there's a lot of creative rights out there. A lot of people out there, you know, taking bits of movies and bits of TV shows and bits of artistic property and making it their own, and you're going to see a lot of this. But
right.
Clearly, Viacom is, as any of these companies, you know, whether it's Universal or Fox or you know, don't like to see their property being used in any way profitable that could assist somebody else.
So let me get this straight. So Viacom's upset because YouTube is using all their kitten videos, their ninja kitten videos.
And that's funny, because I was going to say that, you know, if they really started to enforce this copyright infringement and they really started to press this issue, YouTube wouldn't be anything more than videos of people's cats and fat people falling down. That's what YouTube would be.
Right.
So we would lose all of the interest of YouTube.
Right. Well, so, I mean, it seems to me that Viacom is not against having their stuff shared. It's just that they want to get payment, basically, is what they're saying.
Right.
Okay. Well, I mean, so we should be accurate about what we're saying here. Viacom is just a big, greedy corporation that wants to get paid, you know, over and over and over again because people are sharing clips from some horrendous movies that Viacom made years ago that no one would watch, but there was like a snippet within the movie that was worthy of being shared a million times.
Right.
Okay.
And you know, look, YouTube's a juggernaut. YouTube is really the only juggernaut. Place to go.
I got to look that up. I don't even know if you use that properly.
It is. I absolutely use that correctly. I don't appreciate you questioning my linguistics and my wordages.
You know what? I want to make sure the listeners know this, that Mr. Israel used that word properly. Check this out. So according to Merriam-Webster's dictionary, juggernaut means a massive inexorable force. Wow.
Much like myself.
Well, yeah. When it comes to tanning and lifting weights, yes.
Well, whatever it takes. Right. Worked for me so far, and I don't see any reason to change it now.
All right, so they're a juggernaut. You are correct. That's
I awesome. Just quoted two different Marvel properties, and if any of our useless, uninterested listeners can tweet at me what the two Marvel properties I just quoted, we'll send you a T-shirt. God damn it, I want to send somebody a T-shirt.
Don't call people useless. That's really – I mean
– Sorry. You're out there listening, and you're still not interacting, and I hate you all. Anyway, let's go on.
Well, that's your problem. So the bottom line is the court has ruled in favor of YouTube to allow continued sharing. One wonders whether the judge himself has a YouTube channel on which he shares Ninja Kitten videos.
I'm sure he's got a really rousing YouTube channel. Which, by the way, Comedians at Law has a YouTube channel. And if some of our lackadaisical listeners wanted to go check that out, that'd be nice too. But that won't happen now, will it?
Well, here's what's interesting. So Viacom owns MTV Films and it looks like as well Paramount Pictures. So or at least they distribute Paramount Pictures.
Viacom is huge.
Yeah, so what would be interesting is to have people tweet at us maybe Viacom films that they've clipped and shared on YouTube.
Sure. Well, and I remember that the issue was when people – because you can't – you know, certain things you just can't find on YouTube. Like if you look up Saturday Night Live skits, you can't find them on YouTube because for whatever reason, I guess it's NBC, he constantly has them taken down. But certain movies, you can actually find entire movies cut up into pieces on YouTube that you can watch. And I'm not fully up on this law, but apparently if you alter the video, it's considered now your own creative property. So if you cut up these movies, you can put them on YouTube and people can watch them in whole if they don't mind clicking every 15 minutes on another link.
Yeah. Well, that's good. I mean, I just feel like, you know, I mean, I get the argument that this is intellectual property. On the other hand, I think you put your finger on it, which is that the internet is this massive front, you know, Wild West frontier where things get clipped and shared and, you know, as artists, I guess we should be concerned about people using our material without paying us, you know, royalties. At the same time, though, one wonders whether the sharing itself isn't, you know, enough compensation in a sense.
I agree with you, and I think that's exactly the point where if your material is being cut up and used and shared hundreds of thousands of times to the point where a massive corporation like Viacom is gonna catch on to it, it's probably good advertisement. I think a lot of things have caught on as memes and, you know, and as, you know, urban folklore on the internet that have revitalized, you know, a movie or a performing artist's career just because of, you know, some internet. I think that happened with Betty White. I think a lot of her return was because of, you know, the certain fame that she had grown about her over the internet. So I think that, you know, these companies are a little caught in the past and they need to embrace this trend and not push it because there's too many of us and not enough of them. Yeah. And we'll wait.
I'm with you. All right. Well, we'll keep monitoring that. And now let's move on to the third story. And this week we're doing this a little bit different with our third story.
Excited about this.
Yeah, I know you are. So why don't you go ahead and introduce that?
Well, listen, Alex and I are both fans of the hit TV show on HBO, Game of Thrones. I'm sure many, or if not most of our listeners watch Game of Thrones. I, I, If you're not watching Game of Thrones, as soon as you're done listening to this, go quit your job and watch every episode because it's that good. And I have gone one level of geek past this, and I've read all of the books. The books are fantastic. If the show is great, the books are life changing. That's probably a bit of an exaggeration. And they're great. But Alex, in his wisdom, in his infinite aged wisdom, pointed out that there's a lot of legal issues that we think the characters in Game of Thrones could bring up.
Yes, absolutely.
And I think Comedians at Law would be happy to represent any of the characters in their legal issues, because I think a lot of these guys have a good case.
Well, especially the dragon lady, because she's good looking and she has dragons.
Yeah, and I would. And who doesn't want a dragon?
Right. Now, I mean, just to use her as an example, there's got to be legal issues. I mean, I can't imagine that if you live in an urban area, you're allowed to keep a dragon in your backyard. You must have to get an easement or a licensing issue.
Yeah, and is she renting? Is it in her lease agreement that she can have a dragon?
Right, let alone three.
Right. So, usually most of them say like a 25-pound animal or less. I think the dragons are growing at such a rate that they'll soon be Mack truck size.
Yes, that's right. But I leave it to you because you're the expert on – I mean you've really studied this to a very unnatural extent. And
I have some points I'd like to make.
Yeah, so let's go through those.
I think Sansa and Arya Stark could have a strong case of intentional infliction of emotional distress for being forced to watch the beheading of their loved father Ned Stark. They could probably
spoiler alert, just in case anybody doesn't watch the show.
What's that?
Spoiler alert after the fact, in case anyone doesn't watch the show.
Well, if you didn't watch the show, sorry. And if you didn't know that he loses his head at the end of the first season, you've been living in a friggin' cave because Okay. Everybody knows that by now. There's memes across the internet dedicated to poor Ned Stark losing his head. We'll get back to Ned in a minute.
Okay.
Jon Snow, the bastard son of Ned Stark, who goes on to wear the black at the wall. I think he has some rights. I think there are some inheritance issues where he could probably oppose his brother for rights to Winterfell. Although he is a bastard, he probably does have rights of inheritance. I'm not sure where his place would be, but I think he has a cause there.
Sort of like Prince Harry.
Yes. You know? Although exactly.
Harry's not illegitimate. He's not an out of wedlock child. He's just a redheaded fool who walks around in his brother's shadow, dressing up in Nazi uniforms and hanging out naked in Las Vegas.
Right. I'll take Jon Snow over that any day.
Okay.
I think Bran Stark has an action against Jaime Lannister and possibly Cersei Lannister as an accomplice for assault and battery. Jamie did throw him out of a tower when he caught the two wrapped in an incestual love, which is just creepy. I think Bran definitely has some actions. He's now paralyzed from the waist down and being dragged around by a retarded giant, which is really no way to live your life. I'm sorry I referred to him as retarded. I know that's not politically correct, but sorry. I think Tyrion also has some, Tyrion Lannister has some. Possibly contractual or inheritance rights to Casterly Rock, the Lannister family home that is built on a mountain of gold. Why wouldn't anybody want that? So I think Tyrion confronted his father, saying that he wanted Casterly Rock because the first son, Jaime Lannister, is missing and presumed dead at this point. His father said that it would never happen, and I think I'd like to represent Tyrion in this dispute.
All right. Well, let me ask you, of all these ones that you mentioned so far, which is your case? Which is your favorite case? Like, if you had to pick one as an attorney,
actually, my the one that I would pick is the one that I haven't said yet, the final one, and I think it's the one that every Game of Thrones fan would get behind. I would like to represent Ned Stark in a breach of contract suit for early termination. We spent an entire season getting excited about Ned Stark, getting behind him, looking forward to him leading the cause of justice in the land against the Lannisters, and you know, supporting Baratheon's hold on the throne, and they went and killed him, and we were all just like, WTF, we just lost the main character. Yeah. So I represent him in a contractual dispute for early termination. I believe they breached a contract and they offended all of their viewers.
Right. Well, listen, obviously this is very realistic and it's possibly will happen. The estate of Ned Stark will contact you. Hopefully you haven't just engaged in unlawful solicitation, which would be unethical. But let's just
assume I am nothing if not ethical.
Okay. Well, let's assume that they contact you. They can tweet at you. Or tweet at us, it's at Comedians at Law, or they can tweet at you, at Kevin_Israel.
Or Kevin_Israel_NJ,
right.
Thank you very
much. That's right. And then they could say, look, we're the estate of Ned Stark. We want Kevin Israel to represent us in court of law involving a wrongful death case, loss of consortium, loss of benefits, etc. And let's see if that happens.
I'd like to do it. I'd like to do it, and I hope Robert R. Martin – hope you're out there listening. I love you. You're a genius. But you killed the best character you had. And I'm still heartbroken. 5 books later, 3 seasons later, still heartbroken.
Right. No, I know you are. Well, listen, we have to move this thing forward. So now let's go to the interview that you conducted. Actually, an exciting one with Chelsea. Is it Callinan?
Yes.
Callinan.
Yes. Chelsea is the founder and proprietor of Happy Go Legal. A website. It's not just a website. She does webinars and in-person seminars about career development, specifically aimed at legal professionals, young lawyers, either coming out of law school or just starting out, to figure out how to put all the talent and education they've got into good use and making decisions in the beginning of their careers that will lead them down a positive path through the rest of their careers, whereas many of us go to a big law firm, hate our lives, and then go become comedians.
Well, let's go write that, and we'll catch up with her as you interview her today.
All right, guys, we have another great interview this week. I am here with Chelsea Callinan of Happy Go Legal. Chelsea is a Maine-based lawyer. She went to University of Maine Law School and is based out of Maine. So thanks for being on board, Chelsea. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me. I'm really excited.
I'm excited to have you. And I just like the name Happy Go Legal because it makes this this career that the comedians of law have fled from sound actually a little bit happy.
I know, right? Doesn't it make you just want to be a happy go lawyer?
I wouldn't go that far, but it sounds optimistic.
It's
something the profession could use. So why don't you tell us a little about yourself, and then we'll talk about Happy Go Legal.
Sure. Well, I graduated in 2008, so I came out at a pretty crappy time to be in the job market as a lawyer. I guess fortunately, I had done really well in school, and so I got caught up in the herd mentality of, you know, going to a big law that or a big law firm in Maine is not really a big law firm anywhere else, but one of the bigger firms here. It's about 100 or so attorneys, and just got really caught up in like this path that didn't really feel like me, but it's what everybody was telling me someone who does well does. And so since then, luckily, I've taken some pretty interesting turns in my career and had some really great opportunities and finally kind of forced myself to realize that I needed to carve my own path, and that's just okay. So now I work part-time as a lawyer. My husband and I have a law firm called OptiCliff ESQ. And
nice plug. All right.
Yeah. I work primarily with startups, and it's just really fun to help others kind of navigate what I'm doing. I'm on both sides of the table a lot of time.
So, okay. So now, which leads us into the main reason we found you, tell us about Happy Go Legal. What is Happy Go Legal?
Happy Go Legal is a way for me to create resources that I wish I'd had when I was a law student and a new lawyer. You know, I was taking these twists and turns in my path, and for all accounts, I was becoming really successful for a young lawyer. I was nominated one of the top 40 under 40 rising stars of Maine and recognized as a Maine women leader, recruited by a law firm that I should have been ecstatic about, and I was just really unhappy, and I hadn't really taken the time ever to realize or investigate what it is that I wanted. Like I said, I just kind of got onto this herd mentality of like, this is what people do when they graduate from law school if they get a job offer. And so I created Happy Go Legal. It's really an amalgamation of coaching principles, my personal experience, and conversations with hundreds of law students and new lawyers, maybe thousands at this point, and just trying to take coaching principles that have really changed my life and break them down into like bite-sized chunks for really busy legal professionals.
So am I to understand that in your own misery, you found a way to create a business that herds others into a new form of misery?
What I hope it does is helps people who are already on their path, instead of just getting on the train, they can actually figure out what they want. And, you know, a lot of times when I'm coaching or talking to people on my podcast, the Happy Go Legal podcast, I'm interviewing people who are doing really cool things with their degree and trying to show that you can do more than one thing with a law degree. And let's be honest, in this economy, you've got to, because there's not that many jobs out there.
Yeah, well, that's very true. Unfortunately, the job market is changing dramatically, as is, I think, the legal profession. That's definitely being demonstrated by the drop in law school applications. I think this year was one of the first years that they actually dropped. So I think people are starting to realize that going to law school isn't a golden ticket to a six-figure job and a great life.
Yeah.
Not to say that you won't have that and you can't have that and it doesn't still exist, but it obviously obviously for comedians at law, it didn't exist anyway.
Yeah, I hear you. And a statistic that I've just been really trying to wrap my head around lately is the fact that 75% of lawyers would not want their children to become lawyers. And isn't that shocking? Like, law school teaches you to think like a lawyer. Who wants to think like that?
Yeah. Well, it's funny because, you know, they always say that parents want the life for their children that they couldn't have.
Mm-hmm.
And that's funny to think a parent being a lawyer, which was probably that life that parents wanted, you know, 10 years ago.
Right.
Now they don't. We don't want for our children because the lifestyle leads. Well, one of our associates at Comedians at Law, Joan Weisblatt, has a son that's just starting the law school application process.
Oh my goodness!
And I said, why would you allow him to do this? And she jokes around about it, but he wanted to do it. He wants to do it. He wants to be a lawyer. And you know, I went to law school later in life. I started law school when I was 30. And I saw it. I was just kind of in a rut professionally, and I figured it was something to do, which mm-hmm. really is a terrible mindset to have going into law school. Because number one, I wasn't going in with the competitive mindset that the other couple hundred fanatics had in my law school. So I was just there to learn a tool. You know, learn it was a trade school to me.
Mm-hmm.
And I never had any of those big law goals, but I really kind of got an outsider's view of what law school is and the mentality people have going into law school. And I think, you know, I think it's probably good taking a couple years off and seeing what's out in the world before you go to law school, because maybe you can have perspective and a better idea of mm-hmm. what you want to do with this, number one, very expensive degree, and number two, this degree that, you know, really isn't the answer to everybody's problems like we used to think it was.
Yeah. Well, and the story that you're sharing from your own experience kind of brings to mind – so one of the tools and frameworks that I use in all Happy Go Legal resources, whether it's the podcast or a webinar or a live seminar, I've developed what I call the 6 keys to a successful and sustainable legal career.
I'm glad you brought that up. I saw that on your website, and I didn't see in any of these 6 keys quitting and starting a comedy career.
Well, maybe if you had followed it, you would have gotten there sooner.
Yeah, you need to add a 7th key. But seriously, tell us about the 6 keys.
Yeah, well, basically what the 6 keys recognize is that lawyers are nerdy and we like process. We thrive on being told what to do. And so we all sight check the same and we all, you know, IRACT or CRACT or whatever your acronym was to brief your cases. And then all of a sudden we're like, and now plan your life. And there's no structure. and so what the 6 keys is it's really just walking through, you know, it's kind of coaching principles / psychology principles of maintaining motivation and focus. And so it's kind of you know, a structure that you can go through each of the keys in sequence. And if your listeners want to check out, I actually have a 1-month email course that goes right to your inbox and walks you through the keys in detail. And you can grab that as my bonus for signing up for my newsletter at happygolegal.com. But it just walks through thinking about, you know, what is your meaning and priorities? Maybe for you, meaning was making people laugh, and it was not sitting in a courtroom or whatever you were doing before.
It definitely wasn't sitting in a classroom.
I bet. and so you just kind of walk through and think about your unique goals, because each law student, each lawyer is completely different. And so you walk through and think about your meaning and priorities is the first key. The second is setting measurable goals. Instead of just, I want more, I want better, I want something, to really hone in on what would a big win be for you. Like, how are you going to know if you succeeded? And then the third key is setting reasonable timelines.
We as a law will know we succeeded when our parents stop lying about what we're doing.
Fair enough.
I'm sorry. Go on.
Well, the third key is reasonable timelines. Lawyers are horrible at this. We let clients drive, you know, our deadlines. Partners are breathing down your neck if you're an associate. And when you're actually asked to be like, what's a reasonable timeline for you to achieve that? It's really hard to think about. So that's the third key. And then the fourth and fifth are kind of this big umbrella. The fourth is team and environment. That's who the people are in your life, your physical environment, your mental environment. The fifth is skills and resources. And so this is, you know, what can you improve so that you can get better at this game in your life of getting a job or getting, you know, better balance, whatever it is, you can apply these. And then the sixth key is sustainability and expectations. And that's really pushing people to realize that you're in this for the long haul. And maybe you'll be practicing law for part of your career. Maybe you'll be doing stand-up comedy. But you've got to have expectations along the way that are reasonable. You can't be going 24/7 hardcore in your career. You've got to have some balance.
I think that's all. You know, it's a very good breakdown of what people need to keep in mind tonight. And I'm sure too few people actually do that, which leads to all the misery in the legal profession. How did you develop? I mean, you know, you're a young person. How did you develop so much knowledge and wisdom? Where did this all come from?
Oh, I'm just so wise.
well, compared to a bunch of comedians who are scraping to get by, you are the owl. So please pass on the wisdom.
Well, it's so funny that I was actually just driven to start acquiring new skills because I'd kind of taken the circuitous path in my career of having some job changes and getting recruited and building a pretty robust practice and book of clients of my own. Career service officers and alumni and colleagues always sent me kind of the wayward soul, the law student who needed, you know, a little pick me up, someone to talk to about mentoring. And, you know, I'm very generous with my time. And so I was getting a lot of free coffee and hearing a lot of people's, you know, woes and feeling like I wasn't doing as much as I wanted to help them get on the right path. And so I actually sought out to become trained as a business and life coach through a school called Coachville. And I'm now a associate certified career coach through the International Coaching Federation. And
That's not like becoming an online reverend, is it?
It's not. It's actually a pretty intense process.
Okay, good. We're just making sure. I trust you.
Yeah, no, the ICF, the International Coaching Federation, is kind of like the ABA for lawyers. The ICF accredits schools and sets standards and ethics. And if you go through an actual accredited school in the process, it's I had to coach up to 100 hours to even be able to apply for my certification, take 60 hours of classes. Some of them had to be observed coaching. And so it's this, it is kind of like a trade school. And going through the process of learning to coach others, you've really got to figure out what's going on in your own life. And so it really accelerated the way I started thinking about things. And a lot of the methods that I use with my own clients, whether it's one-on-one coaching or group discussions, kind of stem back to these methods that I've learned in coaching that are really proven. And, you know, so far some of the testimonials and thank yous I'm getting from people working with me, you know, it just blows my mind that I think the legal career craves this but doesn't know about it.
Right. I think the skill that you've obtained and the service that you provide is really – not that I'm trying to ruin your business. Maybe this would help your business. But I think it's definitely something that should be provided in a legal education. I think it should be part of a legal education.
Yeah, I always think about that. Like, looking back, I wish I'd had some support in this area, but I'm not sure who I would have expected to give it to me. You know, it would be great if it was in law school, but, you know, if it's a tenured professor who's hired to teach this and isn't really out in the real world, is it going to lose some of the value? So I'm not sure who needs to provide it, but I feel, you know, I'm happy to.
Right.
But, you know, it is something that I wish could be more ingrained in the process of, you know, even deciding if you want to go to law school. You know, sit down and take the LSATs and do some coaching and figure out if this is a bad $150,000 investment.
Right. That's all. or more.
Absolutely.
Now, before we close up here, what can somebody expect if they come to your website or one of your seminars, or, you know, what can they expect to get from Happy Go Legal?
Sure. Well, there's kind of an array of resources, some free resources and premium resources. For free, if you go to my website, you can sign up and get my exclusive newsletter. And it has right now, depending on when people are listening to this recording in the future, right now it has my 30-day goals challenge as the bonus for signing up. And in the future, it might be an ebook. We'll see. But the newsletter gives lots of tips, freebies, discounts. I also do webinars. I have a blog that goes out a couple times a month. I have a weekly podcast that you can find on iTunes. And then kind of getting up into the premiere, when someone's kind of digested all of that and is still, like, stuck in a job or, you know, just feeling like they need to get to the next level, I do one-on-one coaching. In seminars, a lot of times I'm talking about working with mentors or professional development or transitioning from law school to life. And so I speak on all of these topics at law schools, state bar associations. And I think what people can expect is that I'm just a real person.
Wow.
You know, I am not purporting to be an expert. I'm purporting to be an expert on figuring out my life. And I'm happy to share, you know, the resources that I've gained to help you do it a little bit more gracefully than I have.
Well, that's good to know, because the comedians at large are still trying to figure out our lives. So sounds like a service we might be able to buy into.
Yeah, it'd probably be some pretty funny coaching sessions. I'm in.
Well, we hope to work with you in the future. It sounds like you've got a really interesting business model, and you're offering a great service that I think is very timely, considering the way the job market is, not just for lawyers, for pretty much everybody. You know, it's a very fluid market out there, and people really need to take a broad look at the options and what abilities they have.
Yeah.
So, you know, I definitely wish you the best. You can visit Chelsea's site at happygolegal.com. You also have a podcast. Where can they find the podcast?
They can find it on iTunes, or you can go to happygolegal.com/podcast and download all the past episodes.
And are you on Twitter?
I am on Twitter. I am at Happy Go Legal. I also am on Facebook and Pinterest. Pinterest hasn't been too active yet, but I'm starting to get into that. And also, I answer every single email I get. It might not be the same day, but you can email me at cc@happygolegal.com.
Well, there you go. So if you're out there, if you're floundering, if you're miserable and you don't think stand-up comedy is the thing for you, you might want to check out Chelsea and Happy Go Legal. Chelsea, thanks so much for being on. We appreciate it. Hope to work with you in the future, and best of luck to you.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
Okay, that was a great interview. We're actually going to be doing some stuff with Chelsea going forward. So we look forward.
She's very excited about teaming up with us, and
yeah,
I think she's got a lot to offer.
That's awesome. And now we're going to turn to the last segment of the show, one of our favorites, Good Cop, Bad Cop.
Look, I'm really sorry about that. I just, I saw how aggressive you were being, and I thought, wow, I gotta go even bigger than that since we're doing bad cop, bad cop.
What? No, I said good cop, bad cop. I'm the bad cop, you're the good cop.
Okay, then there it is. That's it. I thought you said bad cop, bad cop.
Okay, let's turn to good cop, bad cop.
Why don't you start this out? Start off as a good cop, because I'm just too frustrated.
All right. So for those of you who don't listen regularly, and we know there's very few of you because you're all rabid, avid listeners, every week we have a segment of the show that's the concluding segment where we have a good cop and a bad cop. I'm always the good cop because I see the glass as half full. I'm always looking on the bright side. Ask my wife. Don't ask her because she would, whatever. But the bottom line is, within the group at least, I have the sunniest disposition. I'm the one who's all saying we should just keep plowing forward, looking ahead, looking for the silver lining. Kevin.
And I think the silver lining is a bunch of crap. We know you're listening. I say this every week. You're out there. You hear my voice right now. And then the podcast ends, and you probably go have a Big Mac, and you sit in your sweatpants and wonder what you're going to do with your life. Well, you should be tweeting at us and interacting with us. You couldn't. There's nobody more desperate for interaction with their fan base than us. And you're like an absentee parent, and we just want to be loved. We want a hug. All I want is a hug.
Well, in any event, that's good cop, bad cop. The opposing forces coming together, hopefully with the good cop emerging victorious. And I know this week that we have a tweet or two from our fan base showing how much they love us. Am I right or am I wrong?
Yes, this week my eye almost exploded from the aneurysm I had of excitement when I saw that people were actually contacting us. There are humans out there. You have heartbeats and pulses, and you're listening to us. And I almost cracked a smile.
So tell me what the tweet is. Tell me who's going to get the free T-shirt this week.
John Stedding, USMC vet, 1968. I assume Mr. Stedding is a Marine Corps veteran.
Yeah.
So thank you for your service.
Semper Fi, sir. Man. That's awesome.
We appreciate it. The Marines are amazing individuals. Thank you for your service and whatever it was you did for us. We appreciate it because God knows it's more than we've done for our country and probably ever will. But needless to say, he did tweet at us and he said that we are the very first recipients of his first tweet ever. I assume he just got a Twitter account. And we were the first people he tweeted at.
How awesome is that? So look at that. Look how silver lining this is. This guy is a Marine. He writes to us with his first ever tweet, and we are lucky to have it. So I think free T-shirt, this is a great omen. I think it's a great way to start this week that culminates with our big show on Friday.
But here, wait. Let's not get too excited, Mr. Barnett. Here's the catch. Mr. Stedding is not a lawyer. He never went to law school. He's a Marine, so he probably never broke a law. So, yes, we have a listener who's interacting with us, but the entire body of our legal community listeners are still useless.
Well, now you're just reaching to find something that's negative for no reason. I mean, the fact of the matter is we have an audience that goes beyond just the legal community. And this,
I think we should all just join the Marines, do a tour, and come back as Marines at Law or comedians at Marines.
All right. Well, I tell you what. Why don't you dress up a Marine and you could sing In the Navy by like the Village People. And I know that's not that funny. It just amused me to say it out loud.
That was a horrible visual, and I hate you for it. But anyway, Mr. Stedding, you've earned a T-shirt. We'll be tweeting at you, but send us your address and your shirt size, and we will send you a shirt you can wear proudly when you're at the VFW with all your buddies drinking incredibly cheap beer. VFWs have great, great beer. And as for the rest of you who are just doing nothing, just insert a bunch of explicatives and profanity.
You mean expletives, not explicatives?
Yes, that's too.
Right. Well, listen, this is exciting stuff. So let's put it out there for everybody. Please do tweet at us, hashtag CalPod, CALPOD, and you know, we're looking for love in all the wrong places. Just write to us. We'll read the tweets on the air. Hopefully we'll have competing tweets and multiple tweets, and we'll have to choose between them to figure out which one is the best. But in the meantime, we do have to close the show. So let's quickly, Kevin, remind people that we've got the show coming up, the live show, the stand-up comedy show on Friday, April 26th at 7:30 p.m. at Gotham Comedy Club.
Come on out.
And also that they should be looking at our blog daily because we've got some new bloggers. And, of course, we've got the Gotham Comedy Foundation affiliation that we're going to be working on building up and announcing more formally later on down the road.
Yes, exciting stuff going on. So be part and get active.
Right, absolutely.